Hi, this is Ned Lubarecki, and you're keeping it unreal with the other Steve Martin on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass.
All right, we're back on the air. On the phone here, I have Ned Lubarecki, and for those out there listening, I gave you a short course in Ned Lubareckiisms and music. I played you, gosh, Ned, I went back to the Rarely Heard. I played some stuff from Chris Jones. I played some stuff from you, and I played some stuff from you and Stephen Mojan from the Nedsky Mojo. So that's pretty comprehensive, huh?
That's a lot.
Sure. That's a lot. So now they're all up to speed. They know everything about you. Let me just say, and I didn't say this when I went on the air, that, of course, you're from Baltimore, or however. How do they say it? Say it correctly for me.
Well, they always say they say it Balmer.
Balmer. Now, there you go.
I don't know. I kind of always grew up calling it Baltimore. Charm City will also do.
What will?
Charm City.
Charm City. Okay. When I just woke up this morning and I saw that Earl Weaver had passed away. Now, you have to remember, I've lived in Kentucky my whole life, but I'm always in the shadow of Cincinnati. I'm in the northern tip, and the Orioles came, beat the Reds in 1970. But you know what? I loved Earl Weaver, and I loved that baseball team. And I'm just, for you, and there's so many bluegrass people on the East Coast around Baltimore, that, man, it's a sad thing to lose the old leprechaun.
Well, it sure is. You know, I think back as a kid when I would first go to Orioles games, my dad would take me up to Memorial Stadium, and I grew up with the kind of a golden era of the Orioles, not even knowing it, but Brooks Robinson, Jim Palmer, Eddie Murray, they were all on the team back then, Ken Singleton, and of course Earl Weaver, you know, and he was such a colorful character of a manager, you know, that was, you would see him come storming out of the dugout, turning his ball cap around backwards, and you knew he was going to be nose-to-nose, trading spit with an umpire, you know, and be thrown out of the game. It was just part of it.
That's why you went.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It was all part of the show. It was great. It's sad. It's a sad day in Baltimore for Earl Weaver.
Well, it's a sad day in baseball. And I'll say that even, you know, when they beat the Reds in 1970, of course, I mean, I guess I was 15 years old, and that was not quite the big Red machine yet. It was the beginning of it. They made some changes after that. But see, Frank Robinson had been traded to Baltimore for Milt Pappas and I think a bag of X'd out golf balls. So we, you know, we lost, and everybody thought, what are they doing? Well, they traded him for reasons not related to talent, because he went to the American League and won the Triple Crown and Most Valuable Player, and came back and punished the Reds severely, not just him and Brooks on third base, but that was a great baseball team. It was a great World Series. I mean, at the time, I'm thinking I want the Reds to win it, but boy, you had to have, you know, it's best before your time, probably. I don't know, but daggone, the Orioles were fun, and Earl was a great, great manager.
Yeah, sure enough.
Great stuff. Well, we've given them all kinds of taste of all the different stuff you do. People have been very excited that you're calling in. And you know, I forgot to mention that Ned has a, you have this, explain the dueling banjos thing that you did on YouTube, because that just cracks me up.
Yeah, this is really kind of funny. I was teaching banjo for a while at a place that's not here anymore. It was a place called the East Nashville School of Music, which is right around the corner from where I live. So it was very convenient to go down there and teach banjo lessons. Well, one of the instructors there was also producing videos for a guitar. It's a learn to play guitar website called guitartricks.com. And so he just hired me. It will pay you a few bucks, you know. So I taught a few sort of beginner guitar lessons, mostly acoustic stuff, one or two flat picking lessons, and they would, you know, do it. And it's the kind of site where you have to, you know, log on and subscribe and do that kind of thing. Well, one of the things they started doing on this site was more or less authorized transcriptions of songs. So the rock and roll guys were all doing songs by like Led Zeppelin and those kinds of things, where you could actually, they would put the backing tracks up there, teach you the solo, and then you could play along with it, and they shot videos of all this stuff. So they decided, hey, we want you to teach the guitar part to dueling banjos. Well, I went in and taught that, and they said, what would really be fun is if we videoed you playing both parts, you know, banjo and guitar. And I really thought they were just going to do it as a split screen. You know, the camera would shoot the one guy playing the banjo, and then it would shoot to the other guy playing the guitar, and it would both be me. Then once they produced it, so I went in and filmed it that way. You know, I had to record it and then kind of go in and play along to the tracks while they videoed it. And then when they produced the video, he actually superimposed me sitting next to myself, and it's really pretty well done. I mean, the guitar headstock is sort of in front of me as the banjo player. I have no idea what studio wizardry and trickery went into doing it, but I asked him because I thought it was kind of a neat little video if I could just put it on the YouTube page. And it's got like a million and a quarter hits now. There's just so many people who look at this silly thing.
And of course, you get $1 every time it's viewed, right?
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, if I could figure out how to do that.
It is. It's fun. And, you know, I posted it on when we talked about you coming on. I was posting all kinds of stuff just to kind of get people ready for what was going to happen or who they were going to hear from. And I was hoping to get it boosted up over 2 million before today. I haven't checked the numbers yet. I don't go off the air. I don't go off the air until 5, so we'll just wait and see. Maybe it'll hit the 2 million mark just from your appearance here today.
The really funny thing is most of the comments that come in, you know, people just, I guess they just type in dueling banjos, or you know how YouTube works. You click on one thing because you see a funny video of a cat, and the next thing you know, you're watching Star Wars, you know, and how the thread follows through, who knows. But so many people write in and they say, oh, this is great, but usually the comment is, but it's played so slow. Sometimes people say, oh, this is great, it's played so slow, I can understand it. And then people say, shouldn't this be faster? And somewhere in the instructions for the video, I explained that it's made for students to play along with. So it's not real fast. So if you're trying to learn how to play dueling banjos, hey, go check out that YouTube video.
You watch it, it makes it pretty clear to me. And, you know, you can't please everyone. If you'd have played it real fast, they'd said slow it down, you know.
Oh, yeah. But it is pretty funny. And the part at the end where I play the final tag lick, you know, the shave and a haircut, 2 bits. And then both of me are looking down at our instruments. And then I just kind of look up at the same time. And none of this was planned. I just sat down and played each part individually. I didn't really think about it, but it's just I happened to do that at exactly the same time, and it's really kind of creepy.
Well, if the talking backwards thing wasn't enough to prove that you're probably possessed, I think that moment right there seals the deal.
Yeah, the talking backwards. You didn't play them that yet.
I haven't yet, because I told you the reason when I saw you in Nashville last October. I played John Hartford straight forward, and then I played yours. Oh, yeah. And then the door is still slamming from the chat room where people left because some guy said, what is this? And I said, wait a minute, hold on, I'll explain. And he never did come back, but I enjoy it. But I haven't played it yet. I haven't played it. You know, I may throw it in there later. I got all kinds of stuff available. But explain what that is so when they hear it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, for anybody that doesn't know the story behind that, what had happened was, and this was a good friend of mine. Actually, I don't know. You may not have any of these records, but if you want to go back in my back catalog of stuff, back in the late 80s, early 90s, I played with a band called Paul Adkins and the Borderline Band. It was really my first professional full-time gig in bluegrass. And Ron Pennington was a mandolin player in that band back in those days. And Ron and I met, actually, when we both joined that band, and we became just the best of friends because his goofball sense of humor matched mine so well. But Ron had, this was years before I met him, he used to like to make these tapes, and he would collect funny sounds, or he would sort of edit things from records, but he did it the old-time, hard, old-fashioned way of pushing the pause button on the tape, playing the record until you got to a certain part, like just editing out all the screams and grunts and groans in the James Brown record and just making a tape of those, you know. So
well, who didn't do that?
Oh, yeah. Well, he took this John Hartford record of John singing Boogie, the Hey Babe, You Wanna Boogie, and played it backwards.
Keep it up. I'm going to make you do that on the air. Just go ahead.
Oh, well, I'll do it here.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead.
I'm listening. Keep going.
Oh, okay. Yep. So he's spinning the record backwards, and he recorded it because, you know, it sounded so funny. It sounds funny going forward, but then it sounded even funnier going backwards. So we used to listen to this tape when we were in the van or in the bus just going up and down the highway for hours and hours and hours to where we started singing along with it. So eventually we learned it. And we also had a little bit of help by this 4-track cassette machine that I had where you could record, you know, you could overdub on it. If you flip the tape over backwards in this machine, you could play stuff backwards. So we would record ourselves saying things forward and then flip the tape over and listen to it backward and try to learn how to do that. nowadays with digital technology, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, we had it harder than the old days.
Yeah, well, you did it anyway, old school. You did it old school.
Yeah, and the funniest time that this ever happened was, and nowadays I do that just as, you know, something funny to do during the show, but we learned how to do it backwards. So I did it on my CD where I, you know, recorded it doing a verse of it forward, and then I perform it going backward, just like we do in the live show. But we played a festival in Florida with John and Jamie Hartford. We're there at the same festival. And we got to meet John and hang out with him a little bit at that. And this was back in the early 90s, I guess. And it was such a thrill for us because we're all huge Hartford fans. And, you know, just getting to meet one of your heroes, that's what kind of going to these bluegrass festivals is all about.
Yeah,
right. So we were talking to John, and we showed him that we learned this thing. So we got out, we were out in the audience watching John's show. And, of course, the way he would perform, he had one microphone on stage, and it was turned up as loud as it would go. And he would stand 3 or 4 feet away from it, you know, when he would say and play the banjo. So he started to do that song, and he looked out, and he said, "There's some guys here who can do this backwards." And he pointed at me and Ron. So I told Ron, since it was originally his bit, I said, "You got to get up there and do it with him." So Ron runs up onto the stage at this festival. And you got to remember, this was a Florida bluegrass festival where, you know, 50 is maybe the youngest people there, you know, one of those kind of festivals. Yeah. And so Ron runs up on the stage and stands right up next to the microphone, puts his mouth right into it like it's just an individual mic, and he starts going, "Eagle, eagle, eagle." And it's snorting and crashing, and all the people in the audience just had the same look on their face, which was just mortified. It was really one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. It was wonderful.
Well, if you're not ready for it, it's a little startling.
It's a little startling, and I didn't even really mean to do this on the record, but it's the last cut on my Nevsky CD.
Right.
And so you listen to the record going through, like if you're driving in a car or something, you put the CD in, you listen to it going through, and you hear some banjo tunes and some solo banjo tunes and some other things, and the final song finally ends, and you're like, "Oh, that was nice," or whatever, and then it's quiet for a second, and then with heavy reverb, all of a sudden you hear, that's a little startling, especially at night.
I have not played that today. Now I can cue it in later because I've got everything here buried somewhere in my library. If you think, you know, and I know it's probably what 6 o'clock in the morning to you, really, to getting up at 2 on a Saturday. But if you think you want to give it a shot, man, I'm happy to let you go. But if not, that's okay. I'll throw it in later. It's up to you. You make the call.
Well, here's the verse forward. The verse goes, "Hey, hey, you wanna boogie with me? Hey, hey, you wanna boogie? A boogie, boogie, boogie with me. We can boogie in the house. We can boogie in the car. Come on, baby, it ain't very hard. Hey, babe, you want a boogie? Boogie, boogie, boogie with me." And then backwards it goes like this. And that part sounds exactly the same. Forwards or backwards, it just does. Eagle, 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 behind that. There you have it.
You know, and I'll just say this, if I hadn't seen that live done a number of times, I would be sitting out there thinking, "Oh, it's got to be a record." But I'm telling you, folks, that was live. That wasn't Memorex. That was live. I've seen Ned do this before, and as scary as it sounds, that was for real. And I just every time I hear it, it cracks me up.
Even scarier is how much time we put into learning that. I mean, if we had directed that same time and energy to say curing cancer or something useful, you know, solving the energy crisis, but instead we know how to do that.
Yeah, you know, and I was going to ask you to do that only if you felt like doing it, really, because I don't want anyone to turn in and because I played all straight stuff, man. The first half hour was just you playing in a band setting, you playing, and I love the tone that you have with Steven when it's just you two guys, and I played from a couple of different bands in your solo stuff, and I don't want anyone to listen and thinking that, you know, Ned the radio guy sings backwards, and that's his only, he's not a one-trick pony. I mean, Ned Lubrecki is, and I've said this before, is one of the most inventive, creative, talented musicians. I know you play up. I mostly know he's a banjo player that I've ever seen and heard. And I don't want people to think that all you do is sing backwards.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve. Thanks.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, how far singing backwards can it get you, really?
Well, yeah, you know, but you know, if you got to be known for something, you know, I should do that on YouTube. Who knows? Maybe that'll be my next.
There you go. Well, let me ask you then a little bit about, if you got a minute, now that we've done all the serious stuff. Oh, by the way, I know you're a serious cyclist, and you must be reeling from this last week. Do you have any confessions you want to make about any performance enhancing drugs you take while you're out biking?
There is one performance enhancing drug that I take. Like I tell people this before we go on stage. Sometimes I'll be reaching into my banjo case and I tell them, you know, like any true musician, I do take some drugs before going on stage. But I pull out my little bottle of Aleve because you know sometimes my back hurts. And the Proxen sodium, man, it's the drug for the O12. Yeah, you know, Mojo and I decided, late last year or sometime last year, we were trying to do something to get into shape. And I used to ride a bike quite a bit, you know, years ago, and had been looking for somebody to ride with. So we went out, you know, he got a bike, and we've been riding pretty regularly. We in the last week or so, the weather's been bad here in Nashville, and we are fair weather bike riders, but. As far as the competitive cycling, and you know, I mean, I have no real opinion on the Lance Armstrong thing. I think it's, you know, who knows. It's a shame that somebody who was looked up to in a sport like that, you know, had to get it by cheating. And, you know, that's a big shame. But we don't really cover it from that. You know, we're not like big fans of watching cycling on TV or anything. We just like to go out and ride.
All right. So what you're saying now on the air is that you've never blood doped before going on stage to play with Chris Jones and the Knight Rider.
Well, if they tested me for painkillers, they'd probably find some ibuprofen in there somewhere. Banjos are heavy, man.
Well, you know, when you said back, I mean, you know, what do they weigh? 20, 30 pounds sometimes, depending on how many gears you got in there.
Banjo, you know, people don't think about that, and it's one of the things that happens here in Nashville. I'm sure anybody that's been through Nashville has gone down to sort of the honky-tonks down on Lower Broadway, and the great thing about those honky-tonks down there is you can go by, and of course the bands that play there, you know, like anywhere else that has a lot of music, they're not really making any money. They're kind of playing for tips, and, you know, if there's so many of them, that the money gets spread pretty thin, but it's a great way to just kind of hone your chops. So you'll see some of the best musicians in the world sitting in with just the local bar bands, you know, playing on a Wednesday night down there. You can find a guitar player that's just amazing, and he might be the guy that's in the road band for some big country star or a session player. And so there's a couple of places that have bluegrass every now and again. But the one thing about those honky-tonk gigs, they don't take breaks. So the bands get up, and they play for 4 hours. You take the stage, and your four-hour time slot is not four sets. It's one set. And so the only way you get to take a break is to step down off the stage and hope that somebody else there plays the banjo. So every now and again, I'll take one of those gigs, just fill it in with somebody, just to see if I can stand up for 4 hours holding a banjo. Mm. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hey, let me ask you something about it. And I noticed this when I listened to the album that you did with Stephen Mojan. You have so many different sounds. Of course, it's just two of you really carrying the sound, and I've seen you do that live also. And your banjo playing and your tone is so much different than if you're just up there playing a hard drive and bluegrass tune. And I mean, you have to, I guess, mentally prepare yourself to, if just you and Stephen out there on stage or recording, it's a whole different approach, isn't it?
It definitely is, and it was something that we thought about when we started playing together. I've been pretty well prepared for it through other musicians that I've played with. Back when I played with Paul Adkins, or of course playing with Chris Jones, and a couple other bands that I've played in. where, you know, the lead singers tended to like more or tended to like some ballads, and even especially stuff in different keys, things that are not in keys where you would play in the open position in banjo, like lots of keys like E and D and things like that. So it's not just an open rolling G sound with a capo or not. So one of the things, and one of the guys, I believe he's another friend of yours who calls in, that I remember reading in the interview he did in the Masters of the Five-String Banjo book when somebody asked Sonny Osborne about, you know, getting sustain out of a banjo. And I can't remember word for word what it was, but he kind of at least hinted at just believe it's there, you know, just play it as though it is there. And it kind of is. The banjo sustains more than people think it does, and so it's almost a leap of faith that it's being able to kind of remember to keep the space between those notes, you know, that one note is ringing into the next, and you can play more sparse music on the banjo than you think.
Just a pretty tone, and right before you called in, I played the Ginny Dance thing, which I just think is a gorgeous tune anyway, but man, and the whole tune is great, but the banjo tone on that is just, it's just so, it just floats there, it just floats, and it just, I mean, just beautiful sound.
Well, thanks. Well, I think also Stephen Mogen did a really good job. He not only, of course, sang that and wrote that tune, but he recorded the CD. He has a recording studio here in Nashville, Dark Shadow Recordings. And we actually, the tone of both instruments is a mixture of microphones and Fishman pickups.
Yeah.
Which is how we perform live. We use our Fishman stuff on stage, and we use the Fishman SA220s, which is it used to be called the solo amp. It's kind of a personal PA system kind of thing. And that's actually something that helps us even in our live shows. It's not necessarily louder, but fuller.
Correct.
We're just looking for a fuller tone since it's just the two of us. But I was really really happy with the way it turned out on the record, because when I first ever heard it on the radio, you know, played up against something like Third Time Out or a band that has a lot of members in the full sound, you know, that I thought, well, geez, our two little guys with a banjo and a guitar, we're going to get kind of washed out by comparison. But I was really tickled that we didn't. He did a great job engineering it, but, you know, we also spent a lot of time trying to arrange the music that way.
Well, and it works. I mean, like I said, I've seen you do it live, and the tone is just that beautiful sound live as it is on the record. So it's not all done in the studio, but like you said, you take it to the stage with that in mind. There's a guy in the chat room, by the way, Jim, who said, I saw Ned with Rarely Heard in Minneapolis years ago and still remember his all-purpose bluegrass song.
Oh, that would be the Cabin of Death.
It's got to be the Cabin of Death, yeah. So, Jim, if you're out there, type in what you mean. I believe that's what you're talking about. That's actually set to come up later in the show, depending on how long interviews go. Sonny's going to call in around 4:30. You know, he's recovering from broken ribs.
Yeah, that's not an easy thing.
Yeah, it isn't.
I'm hoping he's doing well.
He's doing pretty good. Now, we got the truth out of him a couple weeks ago. He was a little elusive about it, but I was finally able to wheedle out of him that it goes down like this, that Bill Evans apparently took a banjo from Sonny and then and hit him with a baseball bat in the ribs, and you know, that's really how Sonny got hurt, and I've convinced him that's the truth, and he believes it, you know, like it happened that way, so that's the story we're putting out.
I've seen Bill with that banjo. I remember we all played that banjo at Nash Camp. It's the one with the new tone ring that he was working on.
The Rocky Top.
And I can confirm that Bill Evans has that banjo, so that just lends more proof to your story.
And it's just, you know, you just got a corroboration, the little bits in here, and Sonny will say that he hit him with a baseball bat and took off with the banjo, and that's how that happened. So anyway, but he's doing fine. Yeah, he's doing fine.
So, if we can convince somebody to throw Bill Evans in jail over this, can I have dibs on that banjo?
Well, that's.
Well, I have to play Sonny for it.
Well, that's, I don't really care about jail. We're thinking more of a money settlement.
Oh, okay.
Jail's not my issue anymore. and the restaurant involved, they don't have anything. So I figure, well, Bill's probably got that Granada that he bought years ago. Maybe we can get that back somewhere. But that's what we're working on. If we repeat it often enough, you know, people will believe it.
Sure.
Oh, man. Well, what are you doing? What are you playing right now? And I'm trying to compress, because I don't want to take up your whole day, but I know enough about you to know that you pay more attention to sound and pickups and electronic stuff, and you're always doing different things to your banjo. And what is it that you're actually, when you go on stage with, say, Chris Jones' band, what are you taking up? What's your main instrument at this point? Let's talk banjos for a second.
My main instruments for the past 4 years has been a Gearing Ted Brooks Saratoga Star. I got it at IBMA a little over 4 years ago, and it's been the banjo I've played the most. My other sort of main banjos, I'm a bit of a collector. I've also got one custom banjo that Robin Smith made for me, and I used both of those banjos actually on the last few recordings I've done. The Nevsky and Mojo record has both of those banjos on it. The last Chris Jones and the Night Drivers CD, well, the last full CD we did, the Cloud of Dust, was recorded. We started recording it before I had the Ted Brooks, and then we finished it after. So it's about half and half with those two banjos. And mostly the Deering I'm just used to at this point. I'm used to the way it feels. It's got a kind of a unique neck shape that I really like. I also, that banjo, I don't know, it's got a certain depth to it that I find really attractive. So it's the one I've been playing the most lately.
Go ahead.
Those are the two. Although I will also say that on the, I don't know if you have Jeff Parker's latest CD, Parker.
I do not.
I played banjo on that record, and I played my Huber on that, which I hadn't played in a while.
Oh, yeah.
I strung it up with light feed strings and kind of made it really bluegrassy sounding, and I actually used the Huber on a couple of tracks that's going to be on a new Chris Jones and the Night Drivers CD that we're in the process of working.
Ooh, when's that going to come out?
I don't know. I think all the tracking is done. Chris is going to be coming back down in February. We're playing at Stigma, and I think he's going to finish up whatever overdubs he needed to do, and perhaps they're going to mix it then. So maybe, hopefully, by the summer, it'll be out. I don't really know.
Well, how did you get? I think I remember how you wound up with the Deering, but explain that to me again, because I think that was a pretty nice hit on for you.
It was a what?
Pretty nice lick for you.
Oh well, I was playing the Bluegrass Fan Fest with Tony Trischka, and I went to the IBMA convention. The Fan Fest is the weekend festival that wraps it all up. And Tony was still performing with the double banjo Bluegrass Spectacular Band. So I'd done a few tours on that. So I was going to play that, and during the week I had run into Janet Deering at the Deering booth at the trade show, and I just said, hey, you know, would you mind if I tried a Deering banjo out to maybe play on the Fan Fest? And she said, well, yeah, here's all of them. Play them. See which one that you like. I played a bunch of them. I played everything that they had. And I really liked this one, and it actually goes back a little further than that. I had done a workshop down in Dallas, Texas with the acoustic music camp, and Jens Kruger was teaching down there as well. And I played Jens's banjo, and of course Jens, this is a little unfair, because Jens could get tone out of a potato if he tried to. I mean, he's just that amazing of a player.
I have the Potato album.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's a great album, the Potato album.
Bud Kruger.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I asked him if his Kruger model Deering had the Kruger tone ring, which is a special tone ring that they make from brass that comes from a bell foundry in Switzerland. And he said that no, he had taken that tone ring out and put in the regular Deering 06 tone ring, the one they used in their normal banjos. And I asked him why, and he said, well, it's a little heavier and it's got more sustain, and I liked it better for the way I play. And he laughed about the irony of Jens Kruger not playing the Kruger tone ring in his banjo. So when we got to the IBMA convention, I tried out all these banjos, and the Saratoga Star that I tried, which is the maple one, it's basically the same kind of banjo as the Kruger model without all the engraving and gold plating. And I played it, and I really liked this one better than any of the rest of them. And Jens came by later that afternoon, and I said, so this one has your crazy tone ring in it, right? He said, no. He said, that one is one that they made with their regular 06 tone ring. He said, it's like my banjo. And it was, which works out better for me because it's actually, I think that toe ring makes it like $1,000 more, you know, to have the Kruger ring. But I took that banjo and played it on the showcase, and you know, it occurs to me that
I knew that story. I was going to see if you were going to fall into it. Then you did. So there you go. I knew exactly where you were going with it. I just wanted to see if you would do it or not. Janet doesn't listen. Don't worry. If they haven't sent you a bill by now, there's a legal concept called latches and estoppel. I think they're forbidden from coming back to get it at this point.
I'll consult with my attorney.
You do that. Well, gosh. Well, so you got a new thing coming out with Chris Jones. What else are you working on? Anything else in the pipeline right now? I don't want to keep you all day. I kind of think I told you that I'd keep you a half hour, not more. I know you got a lot going on. So
okay. I'm gonna keep it. That's all right. Stephen Logan and I have been back out on the road a little bit at Netsky and Mojo. We, you know, this is one of the things where we feel like we really enjoy doing that. We really enjoy going and doing the shows on our own. But, of course, Stephen plays full-time with the Sam Bush Band, and I play with Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. So during the summertime, when all our bands are busy, we don't ever have time for the two of us to play music together. So it's kind of our wintertime. You know, hey, let's go quick, make it Netsky and Mojo run so people don't forget about us and, you know, get to do our thing. But it sort of has to be a part-time thing because of that. So it's usually only over the winter break that we get to perform. But we did an East Coast tour this time. We're getting ready to go back down to Texas in March. It looks like we're doing a quick run down there. But we've been recording our live shows because there's a new song that we're doing. It occurred to me that I needed something to sort of take the place of the Cabin of Death. And so I got to thinking about those old Mad Libs. Remember Mad Libs?
Oh, sure.
You would start reading and you'd fill in the blanks with, you know, a color, a geography, a place, a geographical place, you know, an adjective, and you'd fill in these blanks and then you'd read a story with absurd words. Well, I thought about writing another bluegrass song, but having the audience fill in the blanks. So when you'd say, like, up in my lonesome cabin in North Carolina, well, you'd leave out cabin and North Carolina and just ask for replacement words, like yurt in Kazakhstan. So we wrote a Mad Libs bluegrass tune where every night we go out in front of the audience and we just ask for a list of these words and then we plug them in, and it's been pretty funny. So we're going to definitely have that on the new record. And probably a few other songs will make it from the live stuff. So we're hard at work on that.
You're the hardest working man in show business. Not only are you doing that and traveling with two bands, then I think, as far as I can tell, you spend 20 hours a day on the air at Sirius XM on Bluegrass Junction.
No, not that many.
It is.
I'm there a lot, yeah.
Yeah, you're a busy man. That the competitive bicycle. I mean, that's just, I don't know how you do it.
Well, again, the only person I compete with on bicycle is Stephen Logan, and depending on which bike either one of us decides to ride, I think the equipment makes up for the difference.
Well, Ned,
he went for a day and he kicked my butt. Let me tell you, so I got to dope up and drink another cup of coffee before we go this afternoon.
All right, man. Hey, listen, I appreciate you calling in, and I love your music and I love what you're doing, and I always sprinkle some of your stuff throughout the program, and I know people were excited to have you calling in, and man, I'm just proud to know you and have you call in and just chat for a minute. I don't want to keep you all day. I know you got a lot of stuff going on.
Well, Steve, I appreciate it, man. Good to visit with you again here. And the other thing we needed to touch on was the salsa recipe. Somebody wants.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, somebody wants your salsa recipe.
I will tell you that the salsa recipe is a thing in. It's always in motion. I mean, basically, it's just the same ingredients that you would use. It's tomatoes. A handful of cilantro, some peppers, however many I have on hand, onions and garlic, and that's pretty much it. The secret? Fresh tomatoes.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, when I started announcing on Facebook, which is where I do a lot of the, just like, you know, upfront stuff on who's going to show up, people were sending me questions, and one of them was they have to have Ned's salsa recipe. Now, that may not be someone out there that's listening right now, but that's it. So it's pretty simple. You just go with those things and and produce this thing that's got people raving. I guess I don't know why you don't have Ned Salsa out there. What's up with that?
Fresh tomatoes. You can't package fresh tomatoes. You have to make it and then eat it. That's the secret right there. Fresh tomatoes. You can't beat a fresh tomato.
That's all right. You're going in, you're almost talking about, you almost went into your ham voice on you can't hurt ham voice, but the Bill Monroe thing.
You can't hurt ham.
All right. Hey, Ned, thanks a lot for calling in, man. I'll look for you traveling around with one of your units, and I'll probably see you this fall somewhere down around Nashville for sure.
Indeed. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, thanks.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. Bye.